From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on July 12th when a 14-year-old Brighton student posted a video to YouTube outlining why she believes the Brighton School District is racist. The student is African American, and her name is Kanaya Vickers, and she laid out a number of complaints. She alleged that when white students in Brighton call black students the N-word, there is basically no penalty. But when black students use the N-word, they are heavily penalized. She made a number of other allegations as well and concluded, quote, "They are entirely racist. It doesn't matter what you do. If you're not white, you're in trouble," end quote. The Brighton Town Board addressed some of these issues at a recent meeting. Brighton Superintendent Kevin McGowan has been out of town but has said that the district takes these allegations very seriously and is instituting an extensive review now. Town Board member Robin Wilt has pushed her colleagues to address these matters directly. We reached out to Robin Wilt, as well as Brighton Town Supervisor Bill Maley and Brighton School Superintendent Kevin McGowan. Maley said he was unavailable to participate in this conversation today. Superintendent McGowan told us the district wants to thoroughly review its equity efforts at large, as well as the specifics and the allegations contained in the video, before he speaks in an extended public setting. Ms. Wilt told us she feels the conversation needs to be had now without delay, and so we are here this hour with both Robin Wilt, member of the Brighton Town Board. Robin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Also with us is Wynette Vickers, the mother of Kanaya Vickers, the student who posted the much-discussed video. Wynette, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
I have to admit that one of my goals as someone who hosts conversation is to try to bring voices together and to understand different perspectives and see if we can work through where there's agreement or disagreement. And so when the superintendent indicated to us they take this very seriously, they want to put a good faith effort into understanding not only what Kanaya said, but the efforts of equity, what has worked, what has not worked, before the superintendent comes out publicly in an extended setting, my instinct was to say, okay, perhaps next week, the week after. And Robin, you kind of said that's not good enough. Why do you feel that way?
Well, the video might be new, but these are not new issues within the school district. These issues have been raised in the context of meetings with the community a couple times during the course of the school year. And I feel that it was somewhat disingenuous to say that there has been no time in which to respond to these issues. They are coming up because the response has been less than immediate.
Okay. Wynette, how do you feel about it?
I feel the same way. In fact, there was a meeting, I believe it was in February, where I attended, Robin attended, several school board members, the superintendent, and we presented the disciplinary data showing that African-American or minority students were 7 times more likely to be suspended than white students. And at that time, I was told that there was a vote and of the top priorities to be worked on. And in that vote, this did not fall in the top three. And at that time, I said to the school board and also the superintendent, where do you rate human rights? Because I felt like this was a human right issue.
Okay. And as far as I can tell, the statistics that Wynette cites there, Justin Murphy of the Democrat and Chronicle raised those as he dug them up. Every school district locally has disproportionate numbers of students of color being suspended vis-a-vis white students. Every district, and Brighton is not an exception. Brighton, despite efforts at equity, is still addressing those. And my understanding in brief interactions with the superintendent just in the last week is that he agrees that that's a serious problem and that wants to address that, but he wants to understand in an extensive review. So, it's tough to have this conversation in a sense, because what I want to do is understand the complaints and the concerns and understand what our guests here want done about it. I don't want to take up for Bill Maley or Kevin McGowan or anybody else, but I'm going to try to understand where their perspective might be coming from, because they're not in the room today. Robin, did you reach out directly to Superintendent McGowan after you saw the video allegations from Kanaya?
I did not. The response was a community response. This was not something that I orchestrated. This was the community supporting a student within the district that had raised serious concerns and expressed her frustration. And I think the outpouring of the community was very positive.
But do you have a good working relationship with the superintendent?
I am also a parent within the district. Mm-hmm. My youngest child is still within the district. I had met with Superintendent McGowan in the context of the meetings that we'd had with regard to the disproportionate disciplinary rates. And I had met with him as a parent. But after this video, no, I did not meet with Dr. McGowan.
Okay, I guess I'm a little surprised to that because certainly to us he's been pretty accessible. I don't know, again, of the relationship with the town board or with someone like yourself right. or with parents. But these are very serious allegations, and you have essentially endorsed the allegations in the video. Is that fair, Robin? You think the allegations are accurate?
I think that those are an accurate representation of her experiences, yeah. And I don't think that it's for us to judge. You know, I find it very interesting that in this Me Too movement moment that the allegations that are being made against the district are not taken seriously when they're based on race. But if these were to be allegations that were based on sexual assault, I think that we might view them a little bit differently, especially in this climate. And I think we need to wonder as a society why that is.
Well, let me ask both of you about that, what it means to take allegations seriously, because I was just listening to an interview the other day. You talk about Me Too. The reporter who has broken the biggest stories is Ronan Farrow, the Harvey Weinstein story last mm-hmm. October. Just last week, he was out with a huge story on Les Moonves with CBS. And Ronan Farrow was asked about believing women. And his answer was not to say believe women. He said, take women seriously. Respect them.
Exactly.
Stop disrespecting them. But he didn't say, when there's allegations, believe them. He said, taking them seriously means vetting and investigating fully. Because the allegations are serious against whether it's Harvey Weinstein, Les Moonves, or anybody else. Those are serious allegations. And Farrow's message to other reporters is, vet them, investigate them. That's what it means to take them seriously. But you didn't call the district. You didn't say, look, there are some, I think, broad issues with what Kanaya is feeling, which is a big problem. And then there are some very serious allegations. And let's find out if those allegations are true. But it didn't sound like you did that.
No, I do think that I don't know in what context I would call the district. I am not the parent. I know that the district did eventually reach out to Ms. Vickers. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the underlying issues which were brought to light in this video, the disproportionate disciplinary rates, and she had examples that she raised. We had already had a discussion about the disciplinary rates, and so I don't know what I would talk to the district about.
You felt like you'd covered that ground.
We had covered that ground, and we were put in a holding pattern on those issues.
Okay, when have you had a conversation with the superintendent or leaders of the school?
I have. So initially, the issues that she raised in the video, none of them were new. And when they initially came up and I received a call home about issues regarding them, or Kanaya brought them home, I immediately contact, at the time it was her administrator, Mike Pincelli. And I had endless meetings at the school with him, and we would work through issues, and also with Dr. Tom Hall. And at the time when I met with them, they were addressed at that moment, but it was for those specific issues, not seeing the bigger picture that these are they'll be a continuance of issues like this unless it's addressed on a larger scale. And at that initial meeting when I had it was a group effort to get a meeting with the superintendent and the school board to even present that data. It was clear that they said to me, I mean, it was crystal clear that, you know, we voted on three things. This was not one of them. So the door was shut in my face very early. And even though I kind of, I raised the question, where do you rate human rights? He agreed. And then he said, you know, we'll basically consider And it wasn't taken serious. And in fact, it was kind of minimized because then he presented data showing me how great graduation rates were. And, you know, I was frustrated and because that was not the topic at hand. And then I also said to him, since they were glorifying the graduation rates, which they are impressive, but I wanted to know, the kids who are graduating, to what are they lacking? Or to what, you know, I don't know, what are they?
Well, I do want to address the issue of disproportionate graduation rates as well, because few people know this, I feel, because there wasn't an extended public discussion regarding this, but Brighton had radically different graduation rates among African-American students than it did its white students. It was 55% for African-Americans and 95%, in excess of 95% for overall graduation rates. So I know that there was a concerted effort to have parity with regard to graduation rates. And now Brighton is reporting parity between African-American graduation rates and overall graduation rates. And that's wonderful. But how did we achieve that number? And I think there is some concern about the policies and programs that were implemented in order to achieve the parity within the graduation rates.
What do you mean by that?
I think there's concern whether there's separate but equal education going on within Brighton Central School Districts, within Brighton High School. There are certain programs that have been implemented that target certain at-risk communities, but are those expectations the same as a greater population? And whenever we pull out a group and say we're going to educate them separately, there are always concerns.
Okay. And is that something that the school board, the superintendent have addressed with you?
That was one of the concerns that in the previous parent meeting that was raised.
Okay. So the raising of the grade, which, by the way, I think Wynette's making an important point here. The graduation rates and the suspension rates are two totally different stories. And it sounds like Wynette is saying, look, for months we wanted to talk the disproportionate suspension rates, and you can't just deflect to graduation rates, that's still an issue. And my expectation is the district will tell us whenever they talk to us on the record that they agree that that's a problem. I don't think anybody can see the disproportionate suspension rates, whether it's at Brighton or HFL or Russian, any district,
right,
and not see it as an issue. And it is an issue, and it's an issue across the country. So we'll see what Brighton decides to do about that this year. On the graduation rates, I just want to understand, though, because as Robin explains, there was a disproportionate graduation rate number. There is now roughly parity, is my understanding.
Yes.
But you seem to be alleging something almost underhanded about achieving that. And I guess I want to make sure I understand. So what you're saying is the students were educated separately or given separate standards just to achieve a graduation rate?
Well, there is a separate program, the AIM program, that it targets at-risk students, and they are disproportionately students of color. And they are physically separated from general population in terms of classrooms and whatnot. And I think that's something that we need to look at. How are we achieving that parity? And is it in a just manner that we're achieving the parity? Are we giving all of our Brighton students the same education, having the same expectations for all of our Brighton students?
Okay. Now, on the subject of discipline, do you generally agree with Kanaya's assertion in the video that white students can, and with some routine, can use the N-word against black students, and the district's aware of this, and there's, in her words, a slap on the wrist, basically no penalty? Do you think that that is true, Wynette?
So I think she has a experience with that in her classroom last year. A student, it was her global classroom, and a student changed his password to the word coon and used the word. And the response, and don't get me wrong, this is the response that I did want for this, but I want this response all the time. And that's also what I'm fighting for, restorative circles. restorative practices. And within the school district, I feel like that's the way to, you know, even out those disproportionate suspension rates. So when the student used this word, I was contacted by the counseling department. I was very pleased with their response. They decided to implement restorative practice, but it was very fast. They went into the classroom, basically put all the students in a circle, had a conversation, and they just wanted to see how the kids would react. So I felt like that wasn't the best way to do it, but I'm not sure if I knew the best way either, but I felt like we should have did some research. And so that was the response for that. And then when I guess there was other instances where students had used that word and they received detentions. So that's her experience with it. Now, it could be other kids where they just were spoken to as well, but the fact that that's what she saw as the response, the kid using coon, it was not a first time the student had said racial slurs in this classroom, and the teacher was well aware of that. So it had been brought up before. And I guess this one time, with the password being changed, it was what they considered a little bit more serious versus him just laughing in the back, snickering, saying these words.
Okay. And I want to relate something in that regard as well. There was immediate skepticism with regard to whether students use the N-word, white students use the N-word within this district, and I did have a faculty member reach out in social media to my spouse, actually, and very incredulous, saying, "I've never seen that. It's not been in my experience. I can't take that seriously, that allegation seriously."
What, that white students are just using that word?
Right. And but he had never spoken to the stakeholders, the students, about whether that allegation might be true. And I think, you know, when you say talk to Dr. McGowan, talk to administration about this, this particular faculty member did reach out to his students. And he found that they all corroborated that allegation, that, you know, there are students using the N-word casually within the context of Brighton High School. And so to say that her experience is not true just because you've not experienced the same thing is problematic.
I take that point. I think there's two separate things. I mean, first of all, anybody you want to see, if you doubt white people use that word, look up the video from Columbus of a guy who follows a black man 2 miles home just to call him the N-word in his driveway. And now the man who did that is telling the Columbus Dispatch, "Boy, I can't believe the hate out there from people hating on me." Well, he followed this guy 2 miles home just to deliver that epithet repeatedly. Why? Because the guy wouldn't let him pass in front in traffic or something. Yes, if we haven't heard that personally, it definitely exists. I don't think anybody should be blind to that or willfully ignorant about that. That's different than saying the administration is aware that white students use it against black students and choose not to penalize them, though. And I think that's probably what needs investigation, is if the administration is saying, "We know white students use the N-word against black students and we just don't penalize them," that's horrifying. But if I were in the administration, that's when I would say, "Robin, reach out to me. Let's talk about this. Why didn't we talk about this?"
Yeah, I am familiar with the particular situation that she is talking about, and she is analogizing two different situations and saying this was the response in this case and this was the response in other cases. Now, that's within her experience, and I do not doubt that that happened.
Okay, I'm with you, but one experience is a big district-wide allegation to say the district doesn't care. You know, because if I were a superintendent or a board member or a teacher, I would want to be really sure that someone's right before they say that. And if that's true, we've got to do something about that. That cannot stand if that is true. That I guess that's But certainly Kanaya feels that way. And what you're saying is her feeling is you want to validate that. You want to honor that.
I want to honor that feeling. Not only that, it was a rant. To a certain extent, it wasn't a rant. She did not have disciplinary rates in front of her and go down the list of statistics. These were anecdotes that she was sharing. Her experiences and saying that the overall climate is problematic. And instead of saying that we do not agree that the overall climate is problematic to the extent that it may be hostile, a hostile environment for minority students, I think we need to introspect if we are not saying that her experiences warrant investigation whether we have a hostile climate within our schools.
Do you both view this superintendent and this supervisor, Bill Maley, do you view them as allies, Robin?
They're allies in government. They're allies in administration. Absolutely. These are the people to whom we look to for responses to these problematic issues. My personal experience, I cannot necessarily say that I have felt supported or in allyship with them.
Okay. Wynette?
I think that I would be open to them becoming allies. But as a parent, and I just want to take a step back and talk about that video, because the fact that she went to YouTube says a lot. It said that, and she's expressed this to her administrative staff, you know, administration over and over again, and she's flat out said, every time I come into the office with an issue, because she's had issues throughout the year, when she was the victim at times, she says, you know, every time I walk in there, even if I am the victim, even if I'm explaining how I was bullied, which she was, and the response was not equitable as well for some other situations, she said to her administrator, you know, I feel like I walk out of here with a detention, or you're possibly calling my mom talking about a suspension. And when she said that to him, he said, well, you know, I'd like to work on that, and I'm sorry you feel that way. And he did want to make steps to mend their relationship, but I felt like it's not a personal, him and Kanaya. It's students of color feel like that. They look at their administration, and they don't feel like, you know, they can go to them. And if it's allegations against a white student, that they would be heard. They feel like automatically they have to go in there and express themselves or explain, you know, in full detail before they're heard. And automatically they feel like they're going to be on the defense when going to administration with a problem.
And that's the problem, not having the benefit of the doubt. And it's not equitable. And sometimes I feel that way among my colleagues.
Now, what about the supervisor on the town board as well? You feel that way?
Yeah, definitely. Certainly there is a sense of dislocation and marginalization that I'm not always comfortable with. And again, it's hard for me to speak out about these issues because then you become the lightning rod. Instead of examining and introspecting and saying, you know, why does she feel that way from time to time, or why does she feel that way ever? There's going to be a visceral response to me highlighting the issue as opposed to addressing the issue at hand. And there should be an equal amount of outrage that I sometimes feel that way, and there are circumstances in which I feel that way, as there is to me calling out that I feel that way.
I also want to address part of the video that Kanaya raises concerns about Black Lives Matter and the idea that perhaps there could be an assembly or a school organizational meeting for Black Lives Matter. And in the video, she expressed frustration that Superintendent McGowan had apparently said to her, you know, that that Black Lives Matter, given the fact that it's a political organization, it may open the door to other organizations, other et cetera, trying to also get public school space. And he was sort of working through what the ramifications may be of that. Let's listen to some of what Kanaya said, second clip, Rob, about Black Lives Matter and her response when the superintendent said, you know, this is it is a political organization.
He said that Black Lives Matter is a political movement. In what world is respecting black rights a political movement? Please tell me what racist white superior thinking you got going on to think that me wanting the same rights and the same choices and having equity just like everybody else is wrong. In what way is that a political movement?
That's from Kanaya's video, but I'll admit that part surprised me because Black Lives Matter describes itself as a political movement. I mean, right on the website, I'm going to quote from the BLM website, quote, in 2013, three radical black organizers created a black-centered political movement. Black Lives Matter is an ideological and political intervention, end quote. Is there something sort of just lost in translation here? Because the idea of equality is a goal and it's a human ideal, but movements... The women's voting movement, you know, women's suffrage. These are political movements that have goals of accomplishment that a lot of people share. But I don't.
I guess these are political movements whose goal is human rights, whose goal is equality.
Sure.
So I guess there's a nuance there that gets lost in the rant. But at the same time, I think what she had a problem with was perhaps equating BLM to white supremacy.
Which the superintendent has told me in the past that he was explicitly not doing and would not do, and wanted to work through just what happens if BLM gets its own assembly. Does that open the door to other organizations that also want to have an assembly? What does it mean? Now, I see your reactions. But the superintendent has told me in the past he would never equate BLM with white supremacy, and that he would make that clear every opportunity he could get. I mean, he's not sitting here.
Right.
I don't know what exactly he'd say, but you're both reacting in a sort of a visceral way. Tell me about that.
Well, that was the way his comments were interpreted, and if his comments were phrased so inelegantly that interpretation was made not by just one but several people, then you know, why even bring up white supremacy in the context of the BLM movement unless you are equating them?
And so original comments essentially said that Black Lives Matter could not be taught during the school day at a school-wide assembly because of pushback. He said that he would be forced to allow other points of view to be represented in such an assembly, like white supremacy. So he said that. He immediately acknowledged that perhaps that wasn't the best comparison to make. He reiterated this at a BSU hosted meeting with Chief Henderson and Dr. Hall, clarifying his remarks. So I don't want to go and get into if he said it or if he did not. I did speak to him on the phone yesterday, and he said that he would also like to talk to me about, you know, he doesn't want to get into going in a back and forth argument about things that were said in the video, but he did want to have the opportunity to clarify his remark. And I feel like if he's going to want the opportunity to clarify that remark, then he should listen to some of the back and forth arguments in the video. And also, I would like to point out, we had a walkout for Students Demand Action, which is a political movement. So it's not that he didn't have any political movements. He picked and chose the one he wanted. And I feel like that was a needed movement. You know, my daughter was involved. But honestly, you know, as a black woman, the Moms Demand Action, Students Demand Action, sometimes I feel like, and I'm just going to say it, is a slap in the face to Black Lives Matter movement because, you know, black children have been the victims of gun violence for a very long time. So for it to be organized on that level, the black students were feeling like, wow, you know, white students came out and spoke up and look at the response. When we've been trying, they've been trying for a very long time to get that same acknowledgement. And they were able to eventually have something where they organized, and it was on a smaller scale, and they were able to go outside in the front of the school, and they laid down with pictures of Trayvon Martin and other victims to police brutality.
Okay. I see the phone starting to ring, and if we take calls, which we can do, let's just keep the conversation, I think, focused, fair. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And my guests, by the way, are Robin Wilt, member of the Brighton Town Board, and Wynette Vickers, who is the mother of Kanaya Vickers, a student who posted a much-discussed video to YouTube a couple of weeks ago now. Rich in Rochester, first on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
Just to try to get some clarification, Black Lives Matter was an outside group who wanted to use the school facilities, right? And also to clarify, I'm a strong proponent of Black Lives Matter. I support them. But I think, to be fair, if that's the case, if the superintendent used the example as a white supremacist group wanting to use the assembly, regardless of him saying that, I think to his point, maybe the school should be a political free zone from outside entities. Now, what the students do, like the students that did a walkout, those are your students within your school, and I think that you can delineate, and there is a difference there. But I want to make sure I'm clear on the fact that the Black Lives Matter assembly was from an outside group who wanted to use the school.
All right, so Rich, a couple of things. First of all, when you point out that the walkout for action on firearms was, I think, I don't know if sanctioned is the right word. Most schools will tell you they allowed it to happen, or they didn't stand in students' way when they decided to walk out. But that wasn't a school-sanctioned assembly. It was sort of a national movement in a day where schools did very little to block it, I think, is probably fair to say. I don't think it's an outside group trying to create an event at Brighton with BLM that I understand. No?
The students who are and the Black Student Union wanted to do something within the school.
Okay, yeah. So, Rich, I think it was students within the school maybe inquiring about an event within the school about BLM.
Okay, and even to that point, as much as I'm abhorrent to say that there's an equivocation between Black Lives Matter and a white supremacist group, the question is, would you, as a member of Black Lives Matter, if the assembly was allowed, would you have allowed an assembly of a group of white supremacist students who want to have an assembly? Would you have supported that? If you will tell me that you would support both of those entities within the school property, then I have no problem with it. But you can't say that Black Lives Matter has a right to assemble, who I totally support, and I find white supremacy abhorrent. But you cannot, within our society, start picking and choosing who you have give that right to assemble. So that's the question. At that level, that's where you have to take this. So are you willing to do that? Are you willing to have groups that you totally disagree with and totally see as being harmful being able to assemble if they are students who happen to be white supremacists? And if that's the question you have to answer as the leader of Black Lives Matter on the outside.
All right, Rich, stay there. Okay, Rich. Wynette, Robin?
Well, I do not think there is a white nationalist organization within Brighton High School that made any such request.
That doesn't matter.
He's offering a hypothetical.
That doesn't matter. There can be. They can start it tomorrow. So what you're saying, you need to be able to handle that. And if you're not, then you can't support you. That's, as a leader, you have to be able to handle that.
Well, that's like having a group who is strongly supportive of the NRA also lead a walkout. You know, we do have to pick and choose. We do.
In this case, most school leaders, including Brighton, told me that if there was a group that wanted to do an NRA-supported walkout, they would have to sort of honor that, and that they would. Yeah.
And well, I mean, that's good. I mean, I guess they're equitable on that. I'm biased. I'll admit that. I guess I have nothing to say to that if they wanted to. But the fact that the Black Student Union wasn't allowed is still a problem. They should have been allowed students demand action were.
Last comment, Rich, go ahead.
As long as it within the school bylines and bylaws, no group can do it, you're right. I mean, I don't agree with you. But if they single out certain groups because they may find them to be a little controversial and so they can't say they can't organize, I have a problem with that. But if Brighton can show me or Brighton can say to me, within the confines of our school, we just are not going to support this at any level with any group, I'm fine with them not allowing Black Lives Matter to do it. But from your perspective, you sort of skated answering that question. Would you allow the white supremacist group to assemble in that school? Yes or no? Would you do that?
All right, Rich, thank you.
I absolutely think that all student groups, if that is the rule, I think that the rules have to be applied consistently. And the fact is the rules were not applied consistently because I think there are other groups that are allowed to have assemblies and whatnot. The decision was made that this particular student organization was not allowed to have an assembly because it was deemed too political. And I find that problematic.
Okay. And again, listeners, if you're just joining us, we did invite Bill Maley, town supervisor, who declined to join us today. Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of the Brighton Central School District, says that the district takes these issues extremely seriously and is undergoing an extensive review of both the specific allegations raised in the video and also its equity practices on a wide scale, and that he wants to be comprehensive before he makes public comments and will do so on this program and elsewhere as soon as next week. So that's where we are. Let me get back to your phone calls. Dan in Leroy next. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, I think the whole teaching of the children of the sensibilities of the N-word being the tipping point, that's the word. That's the word that's going to go from escalating verbal argument with each other. Kids argue all the time, and words escalate. And hopefully they settle things without a fight. You know, I'm all for the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't necessarily support the political entity Black Lives Matter, but you know, I've written a number of comments in the local papers in regards to that, in regards to the NFL players' right to protest. And I think it's egregious that that Black people have their lives taken. I mean, I try to tell people, take a walk in these people's shoes, for crying out loud. It's inane, and it says a lot about our justice system also that these cops are covered by the district attorneys and whomever on beyond that. But again, it goes back to trying to foster a community in the school, and you're calling these Black kids. I mean, I grew up, you know, kids were Black, you know, I mean, people of color. You know, I mean, you're fostering differences that they have to tiptoe around these different words. And that just seems totally totally against what you're trying to accomplish. Hmm.
Dan, thanks for the phone call. Some thoughts here from our guests.
I'm not quite sure what to say. There's a continuum of problematic behavior and words and speech. And, you know, we talk about microaggressions. We talk about, things that we do that exhibit implicit bias. And So I don't think it's just about a word. I think it's about a whole continuum of behaviors that connote implicit bias that we're concerned with.
Okay. We'll get back to your phone calls. And let me go to, let's see here, Wes, a lot of phone calls. Wes and Honeyway next. Go ahead, Wes.
Good afternoon, everybody. Boy, I'm listening to this conversation. I've been in these kinds of conversations for a very, very long time. The first few minutes, man, you guys were talking about what's happening at Brighton, what's happening with a student that attends Brighton, what happened to a family who knows what's going on in Brighton. Now we're talking about Black Lives Matter, we're talking about all other things. This is what I suggest, you know, to have a really decent address, and I really feel for your guests, because I see them struggling, but to have a real conversation that addressed the issues that they brought to your studio today, take a look at the last few issues of the Brighton School newsletter and paper. Look at the faces and the presentation that's going on. Tell me how many Black kids are in those pictures, outside of any picture that has to do with athletics. Take a look at the percentage of teachers that are non-white at Brighton High School. Take a look and see the reflection. Those things are a reflection of the school. And I thought that's what the discussion was going to be about. But right now I'm hearing about Black Lives Matter, political things, and I think you're doing a real, not you, but I think, you know, this is just a disservice to the two guests that you have on your show right now that's really trying to explain what a young girl is going through in the community of the school that she attends. And I'll hang up and just listen to what you have to say. Thank you much.
Well, Wes, I disagree. We're talking about a wide range of issues, and some of which Kanaya brought up, and which the school district is working through. And BLM, whether there's room for an assembly for BLM, is just one issue, but it's an important one to these students. It's an important issue to the Black Student Union. But I take the point that you don't see representation. WXXI did a year-long investigative series on the lack of teachers of color in public school districts. And I will tell you, Brighton was not afraid to talk to us about that, but they know that there is a big lack of representation there and just about everywhere else. And it is everywhere else. There's not a single district that comes close in representation of teachers of color. Nowhere. It's not happening. And it's nationwide, but it's even bigger problem in Monroe County. So I take that point. He's talking about school literature and representation. So I'll certainly let Robin and Wynette, you want to address that too?
Yes, absolutely. Representation does matter. And he's talking about an issue, a problem that does exist within Brighton. When you look at whether the yearbook, whether the school publications are representative of the community, you see that certain members of the community are definitely left out, and that is problematic. It was an issue that I have raised with other school districts, but it is part of the overall problem of systemic bias and institutional racism that, were highlighted by Kanaya's video.
Okay. And the video, by the way, is still up. It's about 16 minutes long, an impassioned video, and it's certainly easy to find if you want to take a look at the full extended comments, and she talks about a wide range of subjects in that video. Let me go to Sheldon in Brighton next. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Hello. I'm calling because of two concerns that I have. First of all, I was quite surprised and disappointed to learn of these allegations of racism in Brighton. My wife and children have gone through the Brighton schools. My wife has been a part-time employee of the Brighton School District. She has never experienced or witnessed any racial discrimination. And to contradict a previous caller, I can tell you my wife has worked with musicians, not athletes, and a lot of very good musicians in Brighton have been African Americans and Asian Americans. So that's one point. Now, I'm disappointed that Robin Wills had to give up her candidacy for the assembly to stay on the Brighton School Board, and I, by coincidence, I missed the beginning of this program because I was out doing errands, one of which was to send a letter to Robin Wilt. But I'll summarize briefly what was in the letter. Number one, I hope that she will be successful in helping to eliminate any racism in Brighton. And number two, I felt that before she gave up her candidacy, certain facts about her had been continually misrepresented in the media. The media made it look like she was not eligible for the position she was seeking. The media referred to her living in another state for a few years, from 2012 to 2016. The media referred to a requirement of a five-year New York residency, but did not point out, I don't know if you was mentioned this earlier in the program, it didn't point out that that requirement was severable from a requirement of one-year residency in the district immediately preceding the election, and that five-year requirement, it seems to me, was satisfied by what Robin Wilt did before she lived in any other state.
All right, so Sheldon, obviously a fan of yours.
yeah, obviously a fan, and that is a separate issue, the issue of residency with regard to the assembly race. But I do think he brings up a valid point, which is the amount of scrutiny that you receive as a person of color when you do try to step up and address some of these issues.
But you think the residency stuff was race-based scrutiny?
I think that you face a higher level of scrutiny if you are a person of color, if you are a woman. It's a different type of scrutiny than is generally faced. Absolutely.
Okay. Let me take a look here. We've got a little bit more time to grab a couple more calls. Judith in Pittsford. Go ahead, Judith.
Hello. Thank you so much for this conversation. I am thinking of the strong charge that's given to public schools. I was a public school teacher for decades, and it is to create a citizenry that lives by the ideals of the Constitution, one of them being that all men are created equal. And I think it's very important within any school district, person by person, from the very, very beginning, to be building those ideals. And in order for that to happen, each teacher, each administrator, needs to be able to face in themselves what part of themselves believes or doesn't believe that. And I think it is a very individual thing over a long period of time, and that one assembly is not going to do it. It is not a forum for communication. So I'm just wondering if we could just look at that again.
All right, so Judith, I got to let you go because we got to run out of time here. Some thoughts from Wynette and Robin on that?
Yeah, I don't think it's about one assembly. We've been talking about the overall issue of implicit bias, whether they were treated as the BSU with the same amount of respect, the same amount of latitude given other student organizations.
Wynette, you agree?
And I think that we keep kind of going around in circles, but the assembly was just, that was an issue, so we keep using that. However, BSU is a group, there's many student groups in Brighton. In fact, there was an issue with BSU where they wanted to merge it with another group. So I just want to say that this group want to be able to do the same things that other students groups can do. Other student groups, they lead assemblies. They have other activities. They're able to say things that they have going on in the morning show. You know, BSU, they cannot. So I think even though Naya was ranting in her video, it's all of this bundled up. You know, she gave some specifics, but for the most part, they just want to be able to do the same thing as other student groups.
All right, down to about our last minute or so. Will you come back when the superintendent has had time to review this? Robin Wilt said earlier, you think that the school's had plenty of time to review this. I I took the superintendent at his word that he's making a good faith effort to review all of this and wants to do that comprehensively. Will you come back and will you have that conversation with him? Can we do that in the future?
I would be willing to do that. I just did not want to defer this conversation. I think it's timely now. And like I said, this school district has had an opportunity to address prior.
And do you think, Robin, your disappointments in the leadership of the school district, are they, do you assess them to be interested in working to solve these issues? Do you think that they are saying they are interested and not actually interested?
I think they're interested. I do think they're interested. I always assume best intentions. I would like to see a greater sense of urgency.
Okay.
And also, they are interested and they do work through these problems. But the reason why they're going in circles is because they don't work with people of color to get them done. They have to talk to the minority families to see what needs to be done. There's people willing to volunteer and help.
All right, Wynette Vickers is the mother of Kanaya Vickers, who posted the video that led to this discussion, and Robin Wild is a member of the Brighton Town Board. I hope we all keep talking. I do. And thank you for being here, but let's not end it today. Let's.
Thank you so much, Evan, for having us.
We appreciate
it.
Thank you, Wynette. More connections coming up.